One of my favorite bands. I wonder, do you recognize these lyrics? Taking away the moments that make up a dull day, fritter and waste the hours in an offhand way. Kicking around on a piece of ground in your hometown, waiting for someone or something to show you the way. So you run and you run to catch up with the sun, but it's sinking, racing around to come up behind you again. The sun is the same in a relative way, but you're older, shorter of breath, and one day closer to death. Does anyone know the song? Nobody. I was going to sing it. Okay, well, it's from an album called Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd, and it's called Time. One of my favorite albums. Pray for me. Time is strange, isn't it? We talk about saving time, but we can't actually save time. The other interesting thing about time is that every single person in this room today has exactly the same amount of time in a day. No one has any more, no one has any less. Every single one of us has exactly the same amount of time. Some of that time is non-discretionary and things that you have to do, such as if you're employed, maybe to go to work. Obviously, you need time to sleep, although that varies for each one of us. Time to eat. But in our discretionary time, and I suppose that's partly what we're talking about this evening, not just though, probably the whole thing, probably discretionary and non-discretionary time. I just want to share a few thoughts. Hopefully you will find them helpful about using time wisely, some lessons I have learned, and also feeding into some of the things that Gillian was sharing with us, and recognizing that this world is a bit mad when it comes to time, but probably the time when we need to hear this more than anything. Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 15, "Be very careful how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil." I think the King James Version says, "Redeem the time, because the days are evil." So time is important. God is concerned about how we spend our time. And in that passage we read in Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 15, it ended by saying, "God will call the past to account." So how we use our time is important. Now, we don't want to add to the pressure and to the guilt and to say, "Oh, God is going to judge me. God is going to judge how I use my time." He will, in a sense, but there is no condemnation for those who are in Christ. But he wants us to spend our time wisely, and to spend it well. And who of us wants to end our time by having regrets of how we could have spent our time better and glorified God more? In the mid-80s, there was a significant book published called Ordering Your Private World by a guy called Gordon MacDonald. It was a book that shaped and influenced many lives, many Christian lives, including my own. And if you're having bother with this issue of your quiet time and ordering your world and time, that's a book I would certainly recommend. As I say, it's quite an old book, but hard to beat. Gordon MacDonald, Ordering Your Private World. And some of what I'm saying this evening is drawn from that book. Gordon MacDonald, in his book, lists a number of symptoms of the chaotic and the disordered life where time is out of your control. And I'm going to give you this list, but each one of us probably can tick some of these boxes, but if you can tick them all, I would start worrying, okay? But if you don't tick any of them, you're probably OCD, okay? So you should be able to tick some of these boxes. Yes, that's me. So he says, the sign of a disordered life, the sign of a life out of control. Number one, a cluttered desk. Number two, a cluttered car. And all the ladies go, that's me. Forgotten appointments, missed deadlines. You put too much energy and time into unimportant tasks. You are constantly and easily distracted from what you should be doing and find yourself daydreaming a lot. You feel low about the quality of the work done. You rarely enjoy intimacy with God. And overall, you have a lack of self-esteem. That's a very sobering list, isn't it? And I'm sure some of us could tick some of those. And he more or less says, if that is you, or if you're ticking most of those boxes, then you need to read his book. And maybe need to do an inventory. Four kind of major points I want to share this evening. The first one is this. Know the big picture. Get to the big picture. Get the big picture right of what you're doing, what you want to achieve in a day, a week, a month. And to get the big picture right, you've got to draw back. And that takes time. You've got to carve out time and say, right, my life is disordered. My life is a bit out of control. I need to get this sorted. So you've got to make the time to draw back out of your life, because there's no way you'll be able to see clearly in the middle of it all. So, and part of this big picture, I have two sub-points under this big picture, is first of all, know your why. Know your why. Know why you are doing what you are doing, and be kind of ruthless about that and say, well, why am I doing, if it's a job that you're doing, why am I doing this job? What are my priorities in this job? And one of the things that I suppose I have learnt quite a bit of in these past few years, a lesson in terms of this, is that someone once said to me, ask yourself this question, what can I do in this organization? What can I do in this church, I suppose, which is my area? What can I do that no one else should be doing or can do? What can you do that you cannot delegate? What can you do that people need you to do? And that, I found a very helpful question. To know your why, to ask yourself, why am I doing what I'm doing? Now, that's not easy, especially if you're starting off in business and you're self-employed, because you end up doing absolutely everything from ordering the goods to selling the goods to cleaning the toilet to paying the bills to choosing the paint on the walls, everything. But as the business grows and you take on staff, then you need to ask yourself this question, know your why. What can you do that nobody else can do? What can you delegate to others that they can do nearly as well as you? Maybe not as well as you at the start, but they'll learn and they'll grow into it. So learn to delegate work, learn to delegate decisions, give people responsibility. Now, this obviously applies if you have people under you or people you can give responsibility to. But there are some things which I do not need to have the final say on. Congregational committee, we had this lovely discussion on whether we should get a new photocopier printer for the this is the delights of committee. And I don't really have a view on that. I don't need to make a decision on that. I don't need to make the final call. People may want me to make the final call, but I'm not going to make the final call. People may want me to decide how many loo rolls we should buy for the church, but I'm not going to make that call. I'm going to delegate that one. Now, that's a very absurd question, but there are some people who just want to know everything, and they want to have control of everything, and they want to have the final say in everything, and you've got to stop that. And knowing your why helps in that. When it comes to your private and family life, if you have a family, there's stuff that you need to do and be as a parent that nobody else can do. Now, there's an extent in which you can have someone else do childminding, and it could be grandparents or childcare. But there comes a point where, as mom or dad, you need to be there and you need to do that because nobody else can do that. Nobody else can make that decision. And you've got to decide, as part of your big picture, what are those things that only you can do? And those become non-negotiable. Know your why. And I have found that so important. There are decisions and calls only you can make, and time needs to be devoted to those, and then be ruthless in the other stuff. And that creates time. The second thing that I find helpful in getting the big picture right is identifying the big stones. Identifying the big stones. I'm sure some of you have seen this illustration where someone takes a glass jar and they pour in some sand, and then they've got these rocks, and they'd have to put the rocks into the jar to try and get everything to fit. Has anyone seen that illustration? Yes? Great. And if you put the sand in first and then try and put the stones in, it doesn't fit and you can't get the lid on. However, if you put the stones in first and then you put the small stuff in afterwards, the small stuff flows in around it and you get everything in. And it's a very good illustration. And the big stones are the things that you need to get in first. And you need to identify those when you're getting your big picture. Those five big stones. I believe there are five big stones that you need to get into place in your life, and everything else needs to work then around that. So the first big stone is family. The second big stone is God. The third big stone is work. The fourth big stone is rest. And the fifth big stone is food. So those are the five big stones I identify. Family, God, work, rest, food. Those are the big stones that need to be in your big picture. Those are the big stones that everything else has to work around. And if you are encroaching, if you are stealing time from those five big stones, you can only do that for so long. There will be busy seasons, busy periods where some of that will be impacted and stolen from. But if that goes on for any length of time, your life will begin to unravel. Family, God, work, rest, and food. And you've got to identify those big stones and say, those are the important things to me, and I should not neglect those things, or my life will begin to unravel and get out of control. So start with the big picture, know your why, and identify the big stones. And that will, as I said, take some time. That will take an inventory. Because if you don't do these things, then there will be a crash. There will be a crash of a broken marriage. There will be a crash of maybe a heart attack. Certainly stress, maybe off work with stress. There will be a crash leading to illness or disease. Remember, disease is two words, dis-ease. You're not at ease in yourself. There will be a crash of wandering away from God and a lack of intimacy and joy in your spirit, and we talked about that this morning. And all these things will have an impact. So that's the first thing, get the big picture right. Second thing, don't allow others to shape your agenda. Don't allow others to shape your agenda. No, you shape your agenda. You take control. Nobody else is going to take control of it, so you've got to take control of it. So your diary is a great friend. Whether your diary is on a phone, whether it's in a paper diary, whatever, your diary is a friend. Plan your week, plan your day, plan your month. This is so obvious, okay? But get the big stones into your diary. Know your why. Get those into the diary and then have some margin in your day. We usually overestimate what we can do in a day, so we need to be realistic. Some of us believe in elastic time, that time will expand, but it doesn't. It's fixed. Time is fixed. So get stuff into your planner, your diary, your phone, whatever you use. This helps you to remember those appointments so that you're not forgetting them. Take control of your day. Because if you're in a job or in your life, there will be interruptions. If you're in a job like mine, there are constant interruptions. People will be phoning you, people will be emailing you, and there'll be emergencies. And you've got to decide, well, handle those. So you need to build flexibility into each day and some margin. But even when you have got that margin, don't allow other people to take control of that. You have got to take control of that. Sometimes I get calls from people to say, you must go and see someone immediately. And maybe I do that, and I discover, actually, I didn't need to go and see this person immediately. I didn't need to do this. I could have waited till the afternoon. A phone call came in the morning, but actually, it could have waited till the afternoon. I didn't actually need to see them immediately. But because you're a minister, and because you want to please people, and because you want people to think well of you, you jump. And I'm sure you can resonate with that in your jobs and things. Someone says, like, I need this now, and because you want to please them, you think, okay, and you jump. But actually, you didn't need to jump. In my 25 years of ministry, in terms of real emergencies, count them in the fingers of one hand, where things I needed to respond to immediately, fingers of one hand, in 25 years of ministry. So don't allow others to shape your agenda, because they will. And very often things can wait until tomorrow. And we usually allow the urgent to push out the important. We usually allow the urgent to push out the important. And we are tempted to allow someone to cut in on the big five of family, work, God, food, and rest. You can do that occasionally, but you should not make a habit of it. So, to give again a practical example, Kay and I will have certain dates in our diary and things, and it may be just simply just staying in to watch TV that certain night. Yes, we do that, yep. And someone comes to me with a meeting or something to do or an event, and they say, is that night free? And I say, no, it's not free. I don't tell them what's in it. It's a date night. They don't need to know that. But it's guarded, okay? And we have this strange ability to put business acquaintances and strangers above our loved ones. This strange ability to do this time after time, especially in a job like mine. Your job may be like that as well. I don't know. We can put personal ambition and career advancement in the way of the big five as well. And we see people overreaching themselves in mortgages, in doing overtime and other things, and the big five stones are suffering. And people say to me, but I'm doing it for the family. No, you're not. Because the family are suffering, the family are seeing less of you. And sometimes we have to say no to things and we have to live simpler. We're putting pressure on ourselves. And we're allowing other things and the media and peer pressure to shape us and to shape our agenda and to shape our priorities. So that's the second thing. Don't allow others to shape your agenda. Thirdly, and we touched on it with Gillian, and we cannot look at time without discussing email and social media and screens. Because if there is anything which is causing us a nightmare in terms of our using of our time and wasting time, it's email and social media and our screens. Yes, they bring the rise of technology, and email has been great in terms of helping to work smarter. It should bring us more time on our hands, but as you know, if you're in a business, and as Gillian has shared, if you're at the end of an email, there is a pressure to respond. And in the old days, whenever I was working in an office, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, once the door was shut, 5 o'clock on a Friday, that was it. And there was no email. If people needed to respond or write, they would write a letter. They had to post that letter or hand deliver that letter. And you didn't have to do anything. But now people are pinging emails out at all times of the day and night, and you feel you have to respond to this. So maybe you need to create zones where you say, I will have my email on or my telephone on that time, but I will turn it off on that time. And we all have the facility to turn email off on our phones. And we can do that for a couple of hours or whatever. And I think that's important that we take control of that before it takes control of us. So maybe switch off that email when you're on holiday. Switch off the computer, whatever. We are an extremely distracted generation. And it's so easy for us to go, we've been sent onto something, an email, maybe to a link. We go onto that link, and then that link takes us to another link, and then the link takes us to another link. And before we know it, half an hour is gone. And we meant to walk the dog, or we meant to put on the washing, or we meant to write a letter, and it's just gone. We thought, where did that half an hour go? And we're just distracted, and it's gone. And so we need to take control of that social media because it is ruining a lot of our time. As in much of life, the best gifts are also the ones that have the biggest downfalls. Time. What about quality time? And I think, again, modern technology impacts us in terms of quality time. And I'm probably going to upset some people here, so be warned. We're not very good at quality time. Now, we're thinking about time in terms of quantity, but I want us to think about time in terms of quality as well as quantity. So quality time is where you are giving your full attention to someone or something. So time is, I think it's important that we give that quality. And so increasingly, what I'm finding is that people in meetings and in church are checking their emails while in the meeting. And they shouldn't be. It means they're not fully present in the moment. It means they're not fully engaged in the moment. Same goes for church. Now, because people have their Bibles on their phones, I'm never quite sure, are they on Facebook or are they in Exodus? I honestly don't know. Okay. But I suspect there's quite a few on Facebook or social media or emailing or checking something or other. I don't know. But all I'm saying is you are not fully engaged in the moment. Okay? You are not engaged in worship. You are not engaged in listening to God's word. You are distracted. You are a distracted human being. And you are not in the moment, in the meeting, contributing to the discussion or whatever. It is getting close to me going around committee and session with a bin and saying, everyone put their mobile phone in there. And then we'll have our meeting. Okay, I told you I was going to annoy some people. Because it's not just, and you may say, well, I'm working smarter. But it's about quality time. It's about living in the moment, where you are, and not being distracted. Now, you may disagree with me, but at least I'm provoking you. John Wesley once said, I do not have time to be in a hurry. I have no idea what that means, but it made me think. I don't have time to be in a hurry. But I think what he's getting at is quality time. Give your whole being to be there in the meeting, in the worship, whatever. One of the serious problems with our generation is distraction. It's almost an illness, but it's part of using our time wisely and well. Okay, fourthly and finally, before you shoot me, we need to make time to nurture ourselves spiritually, to nourish our souls. Because one of the things that goes, one of the first things to go in all of this, if we don't get this right, is our spiritual walk and our closeness with God. And it's so important that we nourish our souls. Remember, it's one of the big five. Yes, we'll sleep each day, we'll eat each day. Yes, we'll see family, whatever, work. But where is God? Where is God in our daily lives? If we are to have quality time, if we're to redeem the time, if we're to make the most of the time, if we're not to have any regrets about the time, then we need to make this space for God. Well, it's our quiet time, morning, evening. Find your best time, when you can best have this quality time. Doesn't need to be a long time, but it's regular. It's regular, and that's so important. And then build in occasional longer times of reflection or meditation. So can I encourage you to get good Bible reading notes? Can I encourage you to get prayer guides? Can I encourage you to do things and have things in front of you that stop you from daydreaming? Some people journal. I'm not a great journaler. I do journal. If I'm away on a special retreat, I will journal, but usually I don't. But some people do, and it's great because it focuses the mind. And turn off your phone and put it away or whatever. But you need to build this time in. You need to build time in for corporate worship, the weekly appointment to be here with God's people. Make time. It is quality time. It is key time. And it saddens me, and it's tragic that this is one of the things Christians are letting go. It used to be I would see people out every Sunday. Every Sunday they'd be there. Every Sunday. Now it's once in 3 weeks. Once in 4 weeks. I don't know what they're doing. But I do know this. They're not giving quality time to God. He's slipping off the agenda. He's not that important. And I recognize there are times and seasons where family members are ill and you have to look after them. There are seasons and times when you have to work and so on, and work at weekends, so on. I know that, yeah. But taking that out of it, this is the sense I'm having. It's the sense I'm having that people are saying, no, I can do without God. I can do without meeting God's people. And Our spiritual enthusiasm is cold, and it's on the wane. So it's part of using our time wisely. If we cut ourselves off from God, if we cut ourselves off from our brothers and sisters in Christ, it reduces us and it lessens us as human beings and as disciples of Jesus Christ. So these are just some of the things that I've learned, and I'm still learning. And I'm still putting into practice. I am not perfect on this by any means. But can I encourage us all to take this seriously? It is a serious issue. Redeem the time. Make the most of every opportunity. Because the days are evil.